Have you been listening to the podcast and getting value from the show? If so, I've got a small favor to ask, because over the next few months, we're going to be making some changes to better serve you. Now, I could keep creating episodes based on what I think would be most helpful, but I would much rather get this right. So instead of guessing, I want to understand where you are right now and the real challenges you, your organization, and your team are facing. That's why I've put together a very short 90-second survey. It'll help me better understand you and how I can serve you at a much higher level. And as a thank you, the first 30 people who complete it will receive a free signed copy of one of our books. To take part, just go to the show notes and click the link titled Leadership Survey. Or you can go directly to letsgrowleaders.com/podsurvey. PODSURVEY. It'll take less than 2 minutes. I really appreciate your input. It will genuinely help shape the future of the show.
Wow. Who could have imagined when you said, hey, you know what? I think I might want to do a leadership podcast that we would be sitting here doing episode 200.
Wow. Hey, it's David, and you're listening to Leadership Without Losing Your Soul. Your source for practical leadership inspiration, tools, and strategies you can use to achieve transformational results without sacrificing your humanity or your mind in the process.
Well, here we are. I have been looking forward to this episode for months, seeing it on the editorial calendar. Why? It is the 200th episode of Leadership Without Losing Your Soul, and I am so glad that you're here for it. And we're not alone today. I'm also welcoming into the studio my partner in life and work and authorship and all things, Karen Hurt. Welcome.
Wow. Who could have imagined when you said, hey, you know what? I think I might want to do a leadership podcast that we would be sitting here doing episode 200.
Wow. I know.
It's exciting.
It's wild to think about. And there have been so many memorable moments and cool things with the show. It's exciting. Glad that we get to celebrate together. You know, when I'm thinking about magical moments.
So cool moments. What sticks out for you? What's one?
One of the most emotional moments for me was hearing from Vivian Rigney. He's an alpinist. He's climbed all of the world's highest summits, and he's afraid of heights. And he took us to this moment where he's climbing Mount Everest and getting ready to cross this, you know, icy chasm with the weather and everything else, and he froze. Not literally like temperature froze, but mentally just froze and just was paralyzed with fear. He's afraid of heights. And he took us into that moment in a conversation about being vulnerable as a leader. And, you know, we talk a lot about vulnerability. And so that was just a really powerful moment of vulnerability and how you move through it.
Oh, kind of like freezing, like when we have a tech mishap in one of our live online programs. And I'm like, David, fix it.
It's a little bit like that, yeah, just a little bit. You know, then another one I'm thinking about, not emotional so much, but it's so relevant right now when we're talking about, as we're recording this, there's all this news about AI and ChatGPT and all of these different applications, and had a really cool conversation with Kavita Gamison about AI and all the different applications, and certainly something leaders need to be aware of and be thinking about it as the future comes to us.
Yeah, I mean, it's so interesting, right? Because when we wrote Courageous Cultures, we start by talking about the future and how it will include AI and all of that was just written a couple of years ago. And here it is coming to faster than I think we even predicted. Yeah. And, you know, human-centered leadership is something AI can't do. Empathy, really showing up and building this deep trust and connection. So the work that you're doing here at Leadership Without Losing Your Soul continues to be important, and no bot can imitate that.
No bot, right? Got to have that conversation. You know, and at the same time, that commodification, like if a computer can do it and do it quick and easy, it's going to. And so how we distinguish ourselves and what our teams do together really is a function of our leadership and how well we come together to do those things. So, yes.
All right. So those are some big ones. So what do we have in store today? Where are we headed?
Well, I was hoping to ask you, and I have been thinking about this myself, for some of our favorite clips. When we just talked about a couple of moments, but when we think back over 200 episodes, just to highlight a couple of favorite moments, conversations, maybe something that was of a special impact. So I'll start with you.
All right. Well, let me think. So I got to say, The Long Game.
The Long Game with Dory Clark.
I resonated with that for a variety of reasons. And but let's start with hearing her concept of optimize for interesting.
So a number of years ago, I made a documentary film, and it was an environmental documentary about a woman named Marion Stoddart, who led a successful environmental cleanup in the 1960s. She was a housewife that had no formal background in any of these issues, but she mobilized her community successfully. And we wanted to tell her story about what did it take? What did that look like? So I remember when I was interviewing her, we were asking questions about, you know, her background and how she became who she was. And she mentioned something that I thought was fantastic. She talked about a piece of advice that her mother had given her when she was literally just like heading out the door to college. And her mother said, well, whenever you have a choice of what to do, choose the more interesting option. And I thought that was fantastic because, you know, I mean, first of all, sometimes you don't have a choice and you just have to do the thing, whether it's interesting or not. But if you do have a choice, why wouldn't you choose the more interesting option? We get our heads turned. I mean, we understand this intellectually, but a lot of us get our heads turned by choosing the more lucrative option that can end in heartache if it is something that is not of interest to you. And I think especially in our culture now, there's a little bit of a cult of passion that we have to follow our passion. Mm-hmm. And that's great up to a point. If you have a passion that you're happy following, mazel, I'm all behind it. But there's a problem that a lot of people really are not sure what that is, or it feels like this very, sort of intense question, like, oh my God, what is my life passion? What is my life meaning? I don't know. And they get kind of stuck and it feels like, oh gosh, maybe I can't do anything until I figure that out. Well, that's not very productive. So I think if we keep the frame of, just optimize for interesting, pick the option that's interesting. It's hard to go wrong because you're not going to be bored and you're going to be moving in a direction that feels interesting and fulfilling to you.
Wow, that's quite a story, and it was funny. Dory has quite the bio, and I was not expecting that environmental documentarian was going to be on there. But yes, optimize for interesting. Why did that strike a chord for you?
Well, so it is a long game, right? Building a leadership company, trying to change the world and rid it of cynical, dehumanizing leadership, the work that we do, is long, and sometimes it is grueling. And what I love her, she was talking about, how do you prioritize, like we talk about the MIT, how do you prioritize on what is really, really important? And we teach a lot of ways to do that in our executive programs, in our frontline leadership programs, in our books. And what she said really struck a chord because we haven't called it this, but I do believe we do it. And she says, when in doubt, when you've got to figure out what to do, how to spend your day, you can't do this all the time, clearly. I mean, we've been writing how many scripts? We wrote 52 scripts for our... some of this stuff is not the most interesting thing you can do at any moment. But if some of the time you can optimize for interesting, and I thought, so as I was listening to her talk and then it made, and reading her book, I thought, we do that. And I was thinking of a couple of instances. So we had an opportunity to go speak at the HR Asia conference. And while we were over there, do a bunch of philanthropic keynote speaking to give back, to visit our winning wells in Cambodia. And we took my dad and we took Sebastian, who was just a little nugget at the time. That was a month. Now, it was not the highest revenue month that we have ever had. But it is so memorable, and we will never forget those experiences. And those experiences, I am quite sure, have made us more valuable and more interesting as our world and our work has continued to expand globally and to have a perspective of different cultures and how the tools play out in different cultures. And so by optimizing for interesting, I also think we took our game up a notch. And we're much one step further to this long game that we're playing.
Such a cool principle. When you have a choice, choose interesting.
Yeah, when you can. And sometimes you just got to sit down and do the work too. So.
Yeah, absolutely.
All right. Well, let's see. I mean, I can't even imagine where you begin because you have met so many interesting people. I would say that's the other really fascinating part of this, right? Is the guests that you have on your show, the insights, the research that they've done. So who is another one that really struck a chord for you?
Well, when you're talking about the guests, and we have two different kinds of episodes on this show. There are episodes that I do just by myself, sharing different thoughts or practical leadership tools and strategies. But the guests, in general, one of the things that comes across for me is that there is this choir of voices of people investing in human-centered leadership and trying to change the game. And so, when you're feeling, and listeners to the show, it happens to me, and I'm sure it happens to you, when you're feeling alone and you're feeling like, God, am I the only one who cares about this topic or trying to make change? You're not alone. And there are countless people working and thinking and doing the work as well. And two of those that come to mind in this conversation gave me such hope, and it was just such a joy-filled interview. And that's Marina Nitze and Nick Sinai. And they wrote a book called Hack Your Bureaucracy, which you wouldn't think a book called Hack Your Bureaucracy. Can anything with bureaucracy in the title be cheerful or hopeful? Well, the answer is 100% yes, it can. And their episode, I just loved it. It was one of the first ones that came to mind when I was thinking about an episode that was very meaningful for me and why. So Hack Your Bureaucracy, their whole approach is, listen, they have worked in huge bureaucracies. They've worked in the U.S. government, in the Obama administration. They're doing work in the foster care system, past work with the VA. Huge institutions that can feel very challenging. And so let's just start with this, where, there's so much in the interview, but if you are working in a large organization or a matrixed organization, trying to achieve change can feel so challenging because it's so big. And I asked them, how do you handle that? What do you do? And this is what they said.
Yeah, so one tactic along those lines, because we saw this problem a lot in government, was like, how do you fix the VA, for example, right? And now I work in foster care. How do you fix foster care? Like, that's so overwhelming that most people just kind of shut down because it's such an seemingly intractable, seemingly impossible problem. And I think we were very lucky to have front row seats to see, the VA, is it fixed? Like, no. Does it now have a customer service satisfaction score of 90%? Yes. Like, are veterans now getting their benefits in instantly or within days or weeks instead of sitting in a backlog for 7 years? Like, yes. So that's made really huge monumental improvement. And so the tactic I'd focus on most there is called strangle the mainframe. It's a computing tactic, but my favorite analogy and way to describe it is a Harry Potter analogy, if you'll allow me. And if you have not heard Harry Potter, this is going to contain a spoiler alert, so you should skip ahead 30 seconds. So for the first 6 books of Harry Potter, everybody is trying to destroy Voldemort. Voldemort is the mainframe, the huge intractable problem that nobody can fix. And the way they try to fight him is head on direct. They just try to kill him directly and throw all their resources at it. And it doesn't work. He just gets more and more powerful. Half of Harry's family dies and they create like billions of pounds of muggle property damage in the process, right? But what does work is when they discover the Horcruxes, that you can actually kill Voldemort piece by piece, slowly by taking one tractable thing, a necklace, a tiara, and destroying them. And then at the end, once you destroy it piece by piece, you're left with, a little squiggly monster that you can get rid of. And so that's the approach that I've seen work again and again on these huge intractable problems. You can't fix the VA and you can't fix foster care, but you can say, what if I help build a better claim status tracker to solve this one problem? What if I solve this one problem really well? And if you keep biting off the elephant one bite at a time, as they say, in service of a larger North Star. And I think that's really important to have kind of both pieces. You want a vision of like, what could the future be? What does it look like if we have solved climate change, if we have fixed the VA, if we have fixed foster care, if we have fixed unemployment? And then what is one concrete step we can take in service of that goal? And then take another step and another step and another step.
And so you can see why I take so much hope from that conversation. You know, don't try to change the whole thing all at once, but pick the aspect, pick the element, pick the one process that you can improve. And I love the Harry Potter analogy of you can't take on Voldemort head on, but if you take out each Horcrux and get a little bit at a time and a sliver at a time, by the end, now you have something manageable and you have achieved real transformational change.
Now you're nerding out. All right, let's keep going here.
Oh no, I'm not nerding out. It's about achieving change. It's so good.
Okay. Imagine what it's like to live in our house. These are the kinds of things that when David and Sebastian get going at dinner, and then I'm like,
No. Karen's with us on achieving organizational change. She's all about it. Hope-filled and believing it can be done, and it can start small. The other thing that, again, so many different aspects of that interview, but one of the other elements that I thought was awesome from a human-centered leadership perspective was about disagreeing and disagreeing in a human-centered way. And it's not going to sound real human-centered, but Maureen introduces it. She calls it stab them in the chest. Let's learn more.
Yeah, I have it's sort of a funnily named tactic, but that goes along with that. That is, you should stab people in the chest. And the concept behind there is you're going to have critics. You're going to have people that are going to disagree with you. And your job may not be to convince all of them to turn your way. You may not need all the votes, for example. But the thing you should never do is blindside your critics. So when I was going to disagree with someone in an important meeting, I made a point of it to sit down with my PowerPoint with that person one-on-one ahead of time and say, here, on slide 17, I'm going to say this about what you have to say. And that wasn't to get them to change slide 17, but it was so that they would build sort of a funny kind of trust with me, that they knew I wasn't going to blindside them or stab them in the back in front of a leader, even if we disagreed. And that goes really, really far towards building relationships over years, because you never know. I mean, boy, have we learned this, where one person that you stab in the back one day, what sort of role they're going to have next year or in 5 years, and how you're going to have to face them again. So we really discourage burning bridges and encourage stabbing people in the chest.
All right, so stab them in the chest. We're going to disagree to the person's face, not surprise them, not go around their back, and maintain that respect and dignity. And I just thought from a human-centered leadership perspective, what a vital practice that is, and to recognize we're not always going to agree with one another, but the next conversation, we may need each other, so let's maintain that relationship.
So stab them in the chest is kind of a graphic way to say some of the things that we talk about in terms of owning the ugly, I suppose, in our Courageous Cultures work. And as our clients in Switzerland tell us, putting the fish on the table, that's been my new phrase of the year.
That's been your favorite of the entire year. Put the fish on the table and let's have the conversations we need to have. And we're not always going to agree, but we can move forward together. All right. So those were Marina and Nick from Hack Your Bureaucracy. Very inspiring for me. Let's go back to you. We did an interview together.
Well, it was fun to talk to. Yeah. So we did Marshall Goldsmith, which was really neat because, you know, gosh, how long ago did he write, you know, some of his early books, like What Got You Here Can't Get You There. And so I've been a fan for a long time, back when we were leading in organizations.
He wrote the foreword to Winning Well.
And he wrote the foreword to Winning Well, which was very kind and generous. And he is a very kind and generous man. And so it was super fun to be part of that show and also have him on Asking for a Friend, my LinkedIn show. And, he talks about how it's more difficult to change perceptions. You can change your behavior, your leadership behavior. So you could completely change, but you gotta also convince other people that you have changed and that the change is going to stick. And humans are skeptical. So let's hear about that.
One of the best research principles in psychology is called cognitive dissonance theory. We all see people in a manner that's consistent with our previous stereotype, and we look for behavior to reinforce that stereotypical belief. Well, how do you get people to change perceptions? The key there is follow-up. Let's say my problem is I make too many destructive comments about other people. All I have to do to change my behavior is quit doing it. I go 7 months and never make a destructive comment about anyone. 7 months later, I go, stupid idiots in finance, idiot bean counters. And then all of a sudden, you're my colleague. Your first reaction is, he never changed. If I say, I got feedback. I want to be a better team player, not make destructive comments, give me ideas. You don't believe I'm going to change, but you're thinking, well, there's a little hope there. Now, I'm still human. I'm going to make a mistake. 7 months, rah, 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 idiots in finance. Only now you have a context. You say, you know, you shouldn't have said that. You went 7 months without doing that. You say, you're right, I'm going to apologize. Situation A, did behavior change? Yes. Did perception change? No. Situation B, did behavior change? Yes. Did perception change? Yes. And in leadership, it doesn't matter what we think we said. All that matters is what they heard.
Yeah, that was definitely one of my favorite parts of that interview as well. And gosh, such wisdom for how we engage the people around us as a leader when we're trying to change. And he didn't say this there, but one of the things that strikes me is that also communicates to the people we're leading that it's okay for them to change and how to go about engaging in that kind of professional growth and development themselves and how they can get that support that they need.
Indeed, indeed. You don't know this yet because you haven't read what I've written, but I was upstairs yesterday working on our next book, right? And that you and I are collaborating on. And that's part of it. When we're talking about conflict and communication, it's also this conversation that you're having with yourself. And then how do you be brave enough to change and to recognize that you need to change? And then to Marshall's point, how do you benefit of that in your career by bringing others along with you?
Absolutely. Well, and that's a good moment for us to take a time out from the conversation about past episodes and tell everybody about the survey that we're doing.
Yes. So if you are listening and you have been a fan of David Dye's Leadership Without Losing Your Soul podcast, would you please help? We are neck deep into some very, very important research with the World Workplace Conflict and Collaboration Survey. It does not take that long to complete. It's just 5 minutes, David. I'm sure you'll put the link in the show notes. And we are looking for your experiences and your insights of experience of conflict and collaboration that you've had. And it doesn't take long, maybe just one or two experiences. And so far, the survey's been out at this point, I don't know when you'll be listening to this, listeners, but as of mid-February, the survey has been out 1 week, and we already have insights, good insights, from 22 countries. So would love to add yours to the mix. We will write a better book the more information that we have.
And really out to help, ask you to help us and work together, again, that choir of voices, to build the future of work, of teamwork, of collaboration. So to do that, you go to worldworkplaceconflictsurvey.com. And again, as Karen said, we'll put that in the show notes, but it's worldworkplaceconflictsurvey.com. 5 minutes, and you can add your voice to the choir. All right, well, let's get back to it. So
that was practically a commercial.
It was a commercial. It was definitely a commercial. You got to, you know, take, hey, and while we're at it, buy our other books. All right, no, take the survey. That's our ask. All right, let's see. What else we have here? I know that we have both enjoyed this one immensely, and that is Michael Reddington. And so if you haven't listened to that episode, listeners, I encourage you to get back there and do that.
So I have a question
before
we go there. Does he have the longest beard of any of your guests?
I think he might. Michael, you might win the award for longest beard of any guest on Leadership Without Losing Your Soul. I don't think I've had anyone with a longer beard. Oh, now I'm going to have to pay attention to that. So Michael's beard game, very strong. But even stronger is what he had to say about communication, about accountability conversations. So he holds a credential as a certified forensic interviewer and has done work in really fascinating situations where you're interviewing people to get at the truth of, let's say, a fraud or a theft claim in an organization, things like that. And so you got to interview everybody possibly involved and get at what the facts are in situations where people really aren't necessarily wanting to talk about it. So among many things we talked about in that episode was, as a leader, you're having a conversation, it happens all the time, and something happened, and people have a tendency to self-protect, to get defensive, to make excuses. And so what do you do with that? And here's what he said.
Okay, I've listened to what you said. I think I know where this conversation's going. I have to share information with you, but what should I share and under what conditions is it okay? And often the excuse they give us is the result of that internal negotiation. Okay, I obviously have to tell Dave this, but in order to save face and protect my self-image, I'm going to give him this excuse for it. So they give us that soft admission, if you will, I did or didn't do it. And then they give us the excuse after. The excuse pisses us off so much that we end up glazing right past the fact that they just told us what we needed to know. And we attack the excuse because we need accountability in our organization. That's right, we do. But in order to help them save face and protect our self-image, if we can realize they just gave us what we need, we now know it either did or didn't happen.
Okay, so I didn't get the report on time. I didn't get the data accurate. I didn't follow through the customer's request. I didn't do what I had committed to, whatever, because of X, Y, or Z. So, and we focus on the excuse as opposed to the fact that they actually just owned it.
Yes.
And so what do we do next to be as effective as we can?
I would look right at you and say, David, thank you so much. I hadn't considered that. Please, to steal a phrase, unpack it for me. Or the way that I like to say it, please walk me through that. And now we give ourselves two options. Let's just say that their excuse has some validity. There was a glitch in the matrix somewhere. They didn't have the support or the resources or the communication or something. We say, walk me through that. We give ourselves the opportunity to learn that there might be something we need to address. That's potentially valuable. Let's say it goes the way we expect. It's just an excuse. When we say, thank you, I hadn't considered that, please walk me through it. Number one, it short circuits the entire argument they prepared themselves for. They literally can exhale, they can drop their defenses because they don't have to battle to keep this excuse. And most people, when they prepare an excuse, they don't prepare it in depth. It's surface level. So when we say, please walk me through it, it falls apart pretty quickly. And as it falls apart, and it's important that we ask these questions with curiosity, you know, not with a tone of accusation or judgment. But now as we say, please walk it through, we listen to their answer and start asking follow-up questions. Now what we're actually doing is coaching their thought process and their decision-making chain. Because this situation is going to happen again, and other similar situations are going to happen again. So now we can coach their decision-making chain, coach their thought process, help pinpoint where some opportunities may have been missed, so we don't end up in this same conversation again.
What I thought was so helpful about that is a real asking for a friend question that comes out in our leadership all programs a lot. So, you know, we teach our Inspire methodology for having accountability conversations. You talk about the art, about how do you escalate a conversation. And the reality is those work extremely well. And there are still going to be excuses. And it was, he deals with the excuses in just such a human-centered way where he's showing up curious and he's having a conversation, you know, unpack that for me, right? You know, I love that.
And the thing that I like from the human-centered aspect, so he gives us the skill, obviously, to the practical thing that we always love on this show and in our work to take in that conversation. But as you said, the human-centered aspect of it, genuinely understanding the humanity of one another, and that none of us want to say, yeah, I lied. And we didn't even think of it as a lie in the moment. We got defensive. We didn't do. And so how do we help people get to the truth in a way that makes it understandable and accessible for them to do that? There's no lack of accountability. It's improving accountability and making it less likely those things are going to happen in the future. So powerful. And so human connection and accountability is a beautiful combo for me.
Wow, that's a lot of real, those are a lot of highlights.
They are. And we've had some awesome guests. And we've also had, you know, the ones I've done individually.
So where do you even begin? And how do you choose which of the babies that you like the most? But if you had to pick one, what would it be? I don't even know what you're going to say.
No, you don't. And we did not script this, listeners, because we wanted to just have a conversation. That's what we do on this show. Yeah, so when I think about all of the individual episodes, obviously close to my heart this year, this last season or two, has been the launch of my book of essays, Tomorrow Together, and I've done several, shared several of those on the show. But I think if I had to pick one episode that's a solo episode, I'm going to go back to early pandemic, which is, I was inspired by Seth Godin's podcast, Akimbo. There was an episode he did a couple years back where he took his phone with him while he was out on a lake canoeing. He loves to canoe. It's a childhood passion. He still does it. And he recorded an episode out while he was canoeing. Well, one day, it was holidays, we were in the mountains trying to escape all the craziness of the pandemic. And I was stressed. You were stressed. We'd all, everybody in the world.
No, I don't get stressed.
We'd been working like crazy. And I went for a hike in the snow, you know, 2-3 feet of snow. And I took the phone and I recorded the hike. Mm. And the conversation with the listeners, and really it was an episode of confession and disclosure, is that I had not been practicing good self-care. I had not been taking care of myself. It was coming out in how I was acting with you, with the team, and the need as leaders for us to take good care of ourselves and invest in all the kinds of health. And well, here's a clip of what I said in that one.
And as I said, it's been far too long. Through the pandemic, Karen and I have been working, just like you have, incredibly hard, trying to make a difference everywhere that we can. And that's good. But as a leader, I have become aware lately of some hypocrisy. And so it's confession time. I have encouraged you to be taking care of yourself as a leader, to invest in your own health and your mental health and physical health, all the kinds of health. And I haven't been doing a good job of that myself. And so over the last couple of weeks, that has come to me in no uncertain terms as I have snapped at people I care about. I've tried not to let that get into the team and my interactions with the team, but I'm sure that they know, and I know for a fact that Karen knows. We work too closely together and we're married, so I have not been my best self. And I'm sure that's true of you at some point over the last 6 months. It's true of just about everybody. There's no way to get through what we've all been going through without it affecting our health in different ways. And so my goal today in talking with you is not to be put you on a guilt trip or anything like that. It's to just be real. Your health matters. Your emotional, mental, physical, spiritual, all of the types of health you have, they matter. And if you're going to lead others, you have to be taking care of yourself first.
And it certainly was heightened, the need for that, during the pandemic. And sadly, it's not like, oh, now it's easy, right? And, you know, that's one of the things I think the whole world is still reeling a bit from. How do we take care of ourselves? How do we move forward? How do we recover? How do we become resilient from what has been and continues to be a challenging couple of years? So self-care, and it's not always easy for me either, is to, how do you prioritize yourself so that you can serve and have the impact that you need to have in the world?
Yeah, I was just had a coaching conversation with a leader in an international organization yesterday. And we were talking about the metrics, her own individual personal KPIs that she wants to commit to. And as we had the conversation, number one on that list needed to be, how am I doing? How am I actually doing? Am I in a good spot? Because if I'm not, I'm not going to be able to invest in my leaders. And that was number two. How are my leaders doing in terms of their ability as well as their mental, spiritual, physical health? But
and you didn't tell her that, because that's so interesting, because that we actually put that on our Let's Grow Leaders scorecard for our team, that we're going to every week say, where would you rate ourselves and how are we doing? And we came up with this in our strategic planning session earlier this year. It was interesting because I was thinking, you know, that just gives us an opportunity. If somebody on our team says, I'm a one, like this is a hard stop. Like, we're not talking about work now. We got a hard stop and talk about what's going on for any of us. And to have the courage and make it okay to speak up and say that.
To be real with it. Yeah. And, you know, that's just back to that principle, when we talk about management and leadership, that management principle of what you measure gets done. So are you, not that you have to measure it with a yardstick or a ruler necessarily, but are you in some way taking regular stock of your and your team or your leader's health and well-being and how you're doing that. If we're measuring it, we can manage. All right. Well, let's, before we close out, I want to just talk about, you know, where the show sits, what we're doing, the future, all those sorts of things. And I'm curious, and again, unscripted here, I'm curious, Karen, your perspective on the overall voice and the work that we're doing in terms of human-centered leadership and the value of, because you do this as well with asking for a friend and answering different questions on your show and getting different voices in the mix, and why we do that. What are we trying to do here?
You know, it's funny that you say that because I was doing my workout with my online Troy instructor, because we've been writing so much for our programs, our new curriculum, our new book, I've been thinking a lot about what is the thread that goes through all of it, and what do we stand for? And for me personally, I really believe so much of it comes down to courage, and it is helping people have the courage to stand up for what matters, to speak the truth, to stand up to toxic work environments, to share their ideas. And that plays out in a variety of ways. And, you know, and we're not talking about big courage all the time with a capital C, like, oh, I reported a Me Too, you know. No, it's so often we see people will say, yeah, I have an idea. Well, have you shared it with your manager? No, not yet, no. They wouldn't really want to hear it. And so I think that for me is, how do we continue to make courage practical and give people the confidence and competence to do that well? So I think that for me, that's where a lot of the future is headed.
Nice.
How about you?
I would pair your courage with hope. Mm-hmm. And for me, so much of the voice of the show, the work that we're trying to do, for me, it's about hope. And I think you had asked on an episode of Asking for a Friend a little while back about themes or learning for the year, things like that. And hope was definitely one of mine, because hope is at the center of leadership, the same way that courage is, because it takes that courage to create a better future. But the hope element of it is the belief that tomorrow can be better. If we work together, we can build a better tomorrow that's bigger than any one of us could do. And so that's the hope that your team needs from you, but it's also the hope you have to have for yourself. And that's why so many of these elements, I think, are some of the clips that I chose for me, why they've been so meaningful, is they get back to hope. And they get back to what is possible. And so that sense of inspiration, the courage to move forward, the energy and inspiration to do it, like, that's what leadership's all about.
Hope is part of the long game.
Yeah.
You know, because you can't always feel hopeful in every single moment. But if you have a foundation of hope for the future, that helps inform your choices and how you spend your time.
Yeah. And I think that's one of the things that makes this show so valuable for me personally. Listeners, I trust and hope and know from some of your comments and emails and things that it is valuable for you. For me personally, every conversation is elevating that hope, building that hope, because there's a community of people committed to human-centered leadership. So that for me is what it's all about. All right. Well, on that note, let's send people out with a what I hope is an inspirational moment, and that is, I'm going to go back to Marshall Goldsmith on this one to close us out here, because we asked him for some final parting thoughts and in that interview, and they weren't just good leadership wisdom, and he's speaking from a position in terms of, his book was called The Earned Life, and so he's really reflecting on all of life experience and what people in their 80s, 90s, deathbed kind of thing, what are some of the critical messages and themes there? And here is his final advice for life and leadership, and where we will leave you as we look forward to the next couple hundred episodes and help you to be the leader you want your boss to be.
My final advice is always the same. Breathe. Imagine you're 95 years old and you're just getting ready to die. Right before you take that last breath, you're given a beautiful gift, the ability to go back in time and talk to the person that's listening to me right now. The ability to help this person be a better leader, much more important, the ability to help this person have a better life. What advice would the wise 95-year-old you, who knows what mattered in life and what didn't, what was important and what was not important, what advice would that wise old person have for the you that is listening to me right now? Whatever you're thinking now, do that.
Thank you so much for letting me be a part of this. I really appreciate it. This was a lot of fun. I didn't know how it was going to go. It was an interesting conversation for me. And don't forget to take the survey. The World Workplace Conflict and Collaboration Survey help us in our mission to grow more human-centered workplaces.
And finally, two people that we have to acknowledge as we celebrate 200 episodes. First is our audio producer, Brooke Bradford, who makes us sound good and does such a fantastic job with every episode. Brooke, you and your team, shout out. Love your work and so grateful for all that you're able to add to the show. And also our operations coordinator, Michelle O'Keefe, who takes care of all of the back-end administration, posting, getting stuff up on the internet, interacting with all of our guests, helping schedule them. This show couldn't possibly happen without Brooke and Michelle. So Brooke and Michelle, I want to thank you so much for being a part of this show and the work that happens here. Thanks for making it possible. All right, listeners, we'll see you next time. Until then, once again, be the leader you'd want your boss to be.
This podcast is a part of the C-Suite Radio Network. For more top business podcasts, visit c-suiteradio.com.
Have you been listening to the podcast and getting value from the show? If so, I've got a small favor to ask, because over the next few months, we're going to be making some changes to better serve you. Now, I could keep creating episodes based on what I think would be most helpful, but I would much rather get this right. So instead of guessing, I want to understand where you are right now and the real challenges you, your organization, and your team are facing. That's why I've put together a very short 90-second survey. It'll help me better understand you and how I can serve you at a much higher level. And as a thank you, the first 30 people who complete it will receive a free signed copy of one of our books. To take part, just go to the show notes and click the link titled Leadership Survey. Or you can go directly to letsgrowleaders.com/podsurvey, PODSURVEY. It'll take less than 2 minutes. I really appreciate your input. It will genuinely help shape the future of the show.